We are back. Somehow my internet got disconnected for a second, so that's why you saw me leave and then come back. Okay. Right. Sorry, all everything like went away. I have to go find everything again. I don't know what happened. But this happens sometimes with technology. My favorite. Okay, found okay, finally. There we go. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay, so now we will talk about acceptance. Is a quote from our friend Pete, author of the book Complex PTSD. It is exceedingly difficult to accept the proposition, the fact that recovery is never complete. Although we can expect our flashbacks to markedly decrease over time, it is tremendously difficult and sometimes impossible to let go of the salvation fantasy that we will one day be forever free of them. Yet when we do not loosen our grip on the salvation fantasy, we remain extremely susceptible to blaming ourselves every time we have a flashback. Understanding this is crucial because recovery typically progresses in a process that has many temporary regressions. Moreover, most recoveries often have the unfortunate subjective experience that the temporary regression feels as permanent as concrete. So, how can we come to bear the knowledge that our awful childhoods have created some permanent damage? It helps to see CPTSD as somewhat analogous to a condition that will need management throughout my life. CPTSD can become infrequently bothersome. And even more importantly, we can evolve towards leading increasingly rich and rewarding lives. So, when we aren't accepting what's happening, we are in resistance, and resistance creates suffering, and we can end our suffering through radical acceptance of exactly what is happening. My friend Mark is who introduced me to the phrase, "This is what's happening." And I'm actually doing a group program called "This is what's happening right now." So this is my favorite phrase for acceptance and surrender now, is just being present with whatever is happening. So acceptance does not mean giving up or quitting or going back to sleep and living without awareness or remaining in victim consciousness or that you stop feeling. That's not what acceptance means. Acceptance does mean that you are present with whatever is happening in each moment, whether you're triggered or okay or somewhere in between. It means that you're not trying to force or control things that we can't control. It means reminding ourselves that recovery is a lifelong process and temporary setbacks are a part of that process. And I also believe that grief plays a huge role in the acceptance process. Grief is a non-negotiable part of coming to acceptance and also authenticity. We need and deserve to grieve over a loss of childhood, loss of authenticity, the struggles we have now as a result of those things, the scars we have, grieving for what was and what wasn't and what could have been. Grieving over not having the parents that you deserved, grieving lost time, energy, and money trying to heal something that you didn't choose, lost opportunities, lost relationships, ways that you've unconsciously hurt others, whatever loneliness you feel now, all of it is worth grieving over. The grief is valid and the grief is necessary. And it's not silly to grieve these things. And when you grieve, it is 100% okay to feel like a victim. Giving yourself compassionate grief can bring you out of victim consciousness because the victim part is finally acknowledged and met in the grief. You can grieve what you didn't receive. You can grieve if you didn't have parents who were interested in conversation with you or who wanted to get to know you. You can grieve that you had parents that didn't answer your questions. You can grieve that you didn't have parents who told you stories or read you books or who didn't acknowledge your inherent worth or who didn't give you fun and joyful experiences. So you don't have a whole lot of good memories. That's one of the things I've had to do a lot of grieving over is not having a lot of good memories. You can grieve that you didn't receive any kind of modeling on how to integrate painful experiences. Parents who didn't nurture your creativity or your self-expression or who didn't welcome your emotional expression, who punished you or isolated you for your emotional expression. All of it is worth grieving over. Grieving that you didn't have parents who modeled repair or conscious emotional expression or integrated emotion. That they didn't teach you how to safely feel and release anger, that they didn't give you enough love and warmth. They taught you not to cry. They taught you not to feel. They shamed you in some way. They didn't make sure you got plenty of sleep and nourishing foods. They didn't help you develop healthy personal habits and self-care. So you don't know how to take care of yourself. All of that is worth grieving because you didn't receive it and you deserved it. So here is the process of imagined reprocessing. I've talked about this multiple times, but this is really the first time that I'm ever like sharing how to do this process with yourself, if you would like. So this can help you move through some grief. So you would begin by playing a movie in your imagination of yourself as a young child, whatever age comes up. And in this movie that you're playing in your imagination, you're seeing yourself as this beautiful child who's worthy of love and compassion and respect, who is worthy of being her authentic self. And then you allow the movie to show you scenes of not receiving love, of not being met in the way you deserved, of being met with scorn or contempt instead, of not being properly cared for, not being held, not being seen or heard. Whatever emotion comes up, allow it to come up. You may have anger come up. It may just be sadness. It may be fear, anxiety, grief. It doesn't matter. Just whatever comes up, let it come up and feel it. Witness this small, helpless version of you. It's okay if you feel angry or sad. It's okay if you cry. This is how we resolve trauma loops. This is literally going back in time and giving yourself something that you weren't able to receive at that time in your life. So it's like you're jumping timelines, essentially. We don't get to skip past this work. We weren't able to fully feel then because we had to adapt. So we have to go back and feel it now to heal it. And no, you don't have to remember everything in order to heal. So if you don't have a lot of memories, that's okay. You can still see yourself as a child who doesn't know what's wrong, but knows that there is something wrong and knows that you don't feel met and cared for and nourished and nurtured in whatever that is, even if you can't pull specific situations or things out of your memory. When you work with your kids on your bus, your parts, you can also use this same process. Visualization is a really powerful way to hack into the subconscious of the brain and resolve trauma looping. It can even reduce or heal triggers because you finally go back and process what has been undigested and unmetabolized. And as grief comes up, feel it without being afraid of it, meaning not just fear, but also feel it without judging yourself, feel it without thinking there's something wrong, feeling without, worrying what's happening or if somebody's thinking something about you or whatever, or if it's even real. Like, don't gaslight yourself and be like, did this really happen? Is this really something I should grieve over? Like, if it comes up, trust it. Just let it come up and out. You're going to feel better. You're going to unburden your nervous system from carrying the energy of that shit. So I invite you to be open to the possibility that you could accept yourself and your scars just as you are today, even if you don't do a shred more healing. you are still worthy, you still belong, and you are still wanted. And if you are in relationships with people where you don't feel worthy or that you belong or that you are wanted, then it's time to ask yourself if those relationships are really congruent with who you are. Are they aligned with your authenticity? Can your authenticity exist in these relationships? And is it welcomed and celebrated, or is it a problem? Let's talk about safe relationships. This is one of my favorite sections. So we are hurt in relationship. All of us are hurt because of something someone did to us in a relationship. So we have to heal in relationship. Not having safe, reciprocal relationships and community is a definite source of lifestyle inflammation. We are pack animals. We are herd animals. We are not meant to live alone on deserted islands without each other. Of course, there is a place for working on ourselves. It's important to be with ourselves, know ourselves, sit with our feelings, with our thoughts. It's important to notice our stories and the voices in our heads and be curious about that. Of course, that's important. And also, relationships are containers that bring awareness to our adaptations and coping mechanisms too. There are certain major adaptations that don't come out in our relationship with ourselves, but they do get poked in relationships with other people. I don't have abandonment shit with myself. It only comes up in my close attachment relationships. So you can read all the books, listen to all the podcasts, hire all the coaches, take all the courses, do the breath work and the self work and all the things that you want. But in the absence of relationship, you are going to have no opportunities to work through some triggers, especially those around abandonment or being too much or not enough or feeling unworthy to receive love and nurturing, avoiding physical or emotional intimacy, communicating, vulnerably sharing, et cetera, et cetera. So here are the qualities of safe relationships. This is how you know if your relationship is safe. There is mutual respect. There is emotional vulnerability and intimacy. You are listening to each other to understand, not to respond or argue or react or have an opinion. There is open and honest communication. There is space for each person to get dysregulated or triggered without the fear that they're going to get left. Safe relationships are cooperative, not competitive. They are reciprocal, not meaning that we're keeping score and everything has to be equal all the time, but I am nourishing you and myself in a way that feels authentic, and you are nourishing me and yourself in a way that also feels authentic. That's reciprocity. Safe relationships have fun together. There is a clear repair process after ruptures. There is a sense of interdependence. So you're not codependent overly, and you're not hyper independent. There is a sense of interdependence. In safe relationships, the other person is able to validate your feelings. And also, there is an open invitation to ask if those feelings are based in fact or in story. Our egos can get really offended at that sometimes, and yet it can be a really, really powerful question. In safe relationships, each person accepts personal responsibility for what they have control over. There is space for each person's perspective. Each person's uniqueness is loved and honored, and there are no standards of perfectionism, no gaslighting, and no manipulation. Those are safe relationships. I bet the majority of your relationships just got moved to the unsafe column. Mine were too at one point. In safe, reciprocal relationships, there is no expectation of perfection. Mistakes are allowed. Getting triggered is allowed. I have to heal before I can be in a relationship or before I can have friends or whatever is toxic bullshit. It literally means I'm too much. My scars are too much. I'm not worthy of reciprocal love, respect, and compassion if I'm not healed. Meaning I'm not worthy of this unless this issue is totally gone and never shows up for me anymore. With this reasoning, none of us would ever be worthy of a relationship. And I don't believe that that's true. So this brings us back to acceptance of scars. These are just some questions that you can ask yourself in your journaling time or if you're meditating or whatever, just to gain some awareness around it. Where did I learn that I need to be healed before I can be in relationship? And I don't just mean romantic relationship. I mean, intimate friendship. I call my best friend my platonic life partner. Like, we're not sexual or romantic in any way, but our emotional relationship is just as intimate as the emotional relationship I have with my husband. So I'm talking about friendship too. Where did I learn that I'm too much? Where did I learn that it's not worth it because I'll always get hurt or I'll get left anyway? So why even try? We know that trauma changes the structure and connectivity of certain areas of the brain. We also know that the trauma hardwires the nervous system to default to certain states. And this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. Because instead of focusing on healing all the things, let's channel that energy into cultivating safe reciprocal relationships where no matter where we are on the journey, we belong. Instead of waiting for the non-existent day when we outheal our humanness and then suddenly become worthy of belonging and respect and unconditional love. Co-create a new normal for your relationships. You can set the standard. You can be the model. You'll find out real quick if those relationships are going to survive or not. If you have only one person, a friend, a partner, a sibling, a cousin, a coworker, you can literally describe this type of safe reciprocal relationship to them and ask them if it's something they're needing too. You can take that list of the qualities of safe relationships and show it to them and be like, what do you think? Can we do this together? Can we try? Okay, you really can. This is what I'm looking for. This is what I want. And if in their authenticity, they can't give that to you, that doesn't make them bad or wrong, right? If they can't authentically meet you in a way that feels nourishing to them too, then they're going to fawn or people please or get upset or get angry or, you know, make it mean something or whatever else. So although my inner circle has existed for many years and my relationship with David is over 22 years old, I seriously leveled up in my communication about 3 years ago. I started openly speaking to friends, family, and David using the language of the nervous system and awareness, the same language that I use here, the same language that I use on Instagram. Like, this is how I started talking in my real life. This is one of the problems that my mom had with me whenever I went and stayed with her. She was like, you talk like a fucking therapist. I'm like, well, okay. But this is how I talk now. Like, this is the lens I see through. This is not me trying to be your therapist. This is just literally me trying to bring awareness to the fact that we both have patterns in our nervous systems that react off of each other. And maybe we try something different, right? I started showing up in conversations with curiosity and being more present in my own body. And I asked my inner circle of people to learn this with me and to learn from me. To let me teach them about the nervous system so that we could start to relate to each other in this way. And we practiced. I practiced, they practiced. We don't always get it right, but these relationships are sacred as fuck because they're safe as fuck. Like, they're so safe. Vulnerability, transparency, and mask off authenticity is only weird and feels off limits to us because we've never seen it modeled. I woke up to a voicemail from my best friend this morning where she literally said, I just have a weird feeling right now and I really need to talk to you because I need some reassurance that we're okay. And like, I immediately called her. What do you need? I'm here. Yes, I'm here. We're in this together. I'm not abandoning you. Here's the reassurance you need. Do you need more? I'll give you more if you need more. You're not too much. Like, that's the conversation that we had this morning. What we see modeled from our parents, family, surface level friends, TV, movies, and social media is unhealthy communication with very little vulnerability. There's people pleasing. There's assuming instead of asking. There's passive aggressiveness, fawning, boundarylessness, manipulation, control, censoring, and fear. That's normal. Remember, we're not healing to go back to normal. All of these are normal ways of showing up in a relationship and they're not working. They have not gotten any of us where we want to be in our relationships. They don't create thriving relationships. They end relationships or they keep us in toxic relationships way longer than is good for us. Normal is not always healthy. In fact, the more I live, the more I'm convinced that normal is actually unhealthy most of the time. Some relationships will not withstand this type of authenticity and vulnerability because they're built on one or more person's ability to fawn and people please. to stay silent, to censor, to hold themselves back. The relationships that welcome and practice this level of vulnerability will last, even if it's not perfect. Let's normalize vulnerability, authenticity, honesty, and integrity in our relationships, showing up this way instead of with all of our adaptations. If you're starting a new relationship, you can start with this type of communication and vulnerability from the beginning. Don't wait until you get to a certain level. Give people yourself in the beginning and see how they respond, and you'll know real quick if they're for you or not. If you're navigating an established relationship and the other person is interested in co-creating a safe reciprocal relationship with you, start practicing this type of communication and vulnerability. You will not get it right every time. You will still have conflict, and that's okay. It's okay in a relationship to say, to just name, I have a tendency to self-abandon by fawning and people-pleasing. I'm working on setting boundaries. So if I come across as harsh, please know it's because I'm new at this and I'm learning. It's okay to share how my boundaries land with you. Doesn't mean I'm going to change them, but I'm open to your feedback. Like, it's okay to say that if you're in a relationship where you're recognizing I need to start setting more boundaries. But if you have this tendency to self-abandon by people-pleasing and not setting boundaries, what you're doing here is you're just being radically honest and owning what you do and what you're trying to change and how that might show up in the relationship. Like, that's so safe. It's so much better than like continuing to people please or continuing to not have boundaries. And then you feel resentful for that person. And then they can feel the weird energy. So then they ghost you. And then you wonder if they've abandoned you. Like, that way lies madness. It's okay to tell people. I literally say this all the time to people. I can be really sensitive to nonverbal communication cues like body language and facial expression. I may need to ask you for clarification if I get confused or triggered. Is that okay? Like, I say this to like people that I meet for the first time because I really do have a hard time interpreting communication cues. It's very difficult for me. So I just ask, and it saves so much angst inside of me. And it saves me from making assumptions about other people or from me sitting in anxiety, wondering what I did wrong because of their facial expression that I misinterpreted. Like, it's so much better to just be open and honest. Here's a thing that I can be really sensitive to sometimes. I might ask you for clarification. Cool. It's okay to say, I tend to overgive in relationships, and I let people emotionally dump on me because I believe that's what makes me a good friend. I'm working on this. Please ask me before you vent or dump. And know that if I say no, it doesn't mean you can never share. Are you okay with navigating this on a case-by-case basis? Right? If you're someone who tends to just listen to people while they're in their shit and you feel like you have to take care of them and help them, and that becomes emotionally draining for you, it's okay to say stuff like this. This is honest and vulnerable. It's okay to say, this is something I have to say when people don't text me back. I totally understand if you need time to think about what I've asked. If you could acknowledge that you've heard or seen my request and you're thinking about it, it would help me feel more secure. Versus when I text someone and they don't text me back, like the voices in my head are immediately like, oh my God, are they mad at me? I start replaying the last time we were together. Did I say something that offended them? Did I do something that offended them? Was I inappropriate in some way? Like, I will replay that over and over and over. Or I can use my words and ask, right? Then I don't have to sit in that angst. It's okay to say, I have an anxious avoidant attachment style. If I start to seem clingy and needy and then push you away, please let me know. I'm really working on this and I don't want to send you mixed signals because I love you. This is a disorganized attachment. When they're in an anxious state, they feel needy and clingy and they're very anxious and they need lots of reassurance. But when they flip into an avoidant state, they can seem withdrawn and quiet and like they're giving you the silent treatment or like they're mad at you. And in relationship, that back and forth can create a lot of confusion and it can lead to conflict and fights and hurt feelings. Whereas if you can own and name, hey, I have this thing that I do sometimes and I'm not always aware of it. Can you let me know if that starts showing up here? Because I recognize that that can be confusing for you and I don't want to hurt you. Boom. Avoid the fucking conflict. Avoid all the stories. Avoid the projections and the assumptions and the hurt feelings and all of that just with some good communication. This is something that I've had to say to Honor and David and some of my other friends I'm realizing that I may always need a higher level of emotional support and intimate relationships. Can that be okay? Will you let me know if it's ever too much for you? Like, really simple. And they do let me know when it's too much. And I don't take it like, oh my God, they're leaving me. They're not here for me. I've offended them. I'm too much. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, thank you for telling me. I got the honest answer and not them people pleasing. I got their authenticity and not their adaptation. It's okay to say, I'd really love to deepen our connection. Can I be vulnerable about this? Can I be vulnerable about my emotional scars? Can I be vulnerable about my triggers? Can I be vulnerable about what I struggle with? Can I just tell you about that and be witnessed in that? Like, that's transformational. It's also okay to say, I don't expect that we'll have a perfectly smooth relationship all the time, but repairing after ruptures is really important to me because I value you and this relationship. Are you open to repairing with me when we have a conflict? If their answer is no, run. Fucking run. Because you will never feel safe in a relationship that doesn't have clear repair after conflict. Do you see how you're never going to accidentally stumble into this kind of relationship? Like, do you see how intentional it is, how much you have to choose it? It has to be co-created. It takes the work of both people. It has to be safe and it has to be reciprocal. Don't reduce lifestyle inflammation because it's a necessary part of your journey, even though it is necessary. Reduce it so that you open up room in your life to just live and thrive. Every hour of your day doesn't have to be filled with the healing journey. Like, it's okay to just do fucking nothing. It really is. So where can you free up some time? What do you need to say no to so you can say yes to what lights you up? Where are you still in a fixing energy? How can you bring in support instead? Reducing lifestyle inflammation may require you to make some big, scary changes. I've had clients who have left jobs and relationships. They have picked up their lives and moved so they could follow what feels spacious. I have a client going through a breakup and a move right now. I have clients who have separated from partners, who have quit their job to start their own business, to work for themselves, to choose more joy and spaciousness. Like, you come into my world and it shakes up your life a little bit because I will call you to authenticity, and it's pretty good chance that what you're doing sometimes isn't what's authentic. And also reduce the lifestyle inflammation of the healing journey itself. You don't have to be a healing journey perfectionist. You don't have to have healing journey anxiety. There's no imaginary clock ticking. You can choose something else. You can wait for an issue to come up organically and deal with it in the moment versus fixating on it all the time as this problem that you have to solve before you can be worthy. So back in the Overcoming Health Anxiety workshop, 3 workshops ago, we talked about changing the energy with which we approach our healthcare, having acceptance of what's happening in our bodies, and cultivating self-trust. And we've now come full circle back to that. Symptoms aren't the root cause of health anxiety. Nervous system dysregulation and triggers aren't the cause of healing journey anxiety. Are you hypervigilant or hypersensitive about the state of your nervous system? Do you catastrophize when you've been triggered or if you've been dysregulated for a longer period of time? Does it mean you're crashing? Does it mean the future is probably bleak and there's a struggle ahead of you? Do you obsess and worry about healing your nervous system and trauma? Are you trying to control and micromanage your nervous system or the amount of time it's taking? Are you trying to heal perfectly? What would it take to let that go and just live? Trusting yourself to meet yourself in each moment, to feel whatever's present, to deal with it as it comes, to not have it all figured out, to let there be some mystery, to be vulnerable, to find what feels authentic, to take risks, to mess up, and everything just be okay. Let's talk about the energy of fixing versus the energy of supporting, because I really want you guys to get a somatic snapshot of the difference between these energies, because it can be subtle. So fixing implies that something is broken. Typically with fixing, there's almost this attitude of like, well, if a little bit is good, more is probably better. Fixing has kind of a grabbing, urgent energy. And it's like whack-a-mole. You know, it's like you hit it and it comes up over here, and you hit it and it comes up over here. It's like, that's fixing energy. In a supporting energy, you recognize that nothing is actually broken. It just needs some extra care. Less is more with supporting. It's not urgent, and it has a more grounded and stabilizing energy. So here are some curiosity questions. If you're journaling or doing homework around this, or just trying to be in more awareness about this, who am I if I'm not fixing or healing something? Am I in an energy of fixing? And how could I integrate my fixer kid on the bus so that I can support myself in a grounded, non-urgent, accepting way? Okay. I also love the word nourish instead of support. So nourish and support versus fixing. Like, though, nourish and support feels much more spacious to me. If there was nothing to fix and only mindfulness about how I'm supporting myself, what would I love to do with my time, energy, and money? Dream big here. There's no limit. Is there anything about an energy of fixing that feels authentic? What exactly am I trying to fix? What could it look like to support myself through this instead of fixing? Is the energy of fixing actually calling me to support myself? Can I trust myself to support myself? And where do I feel any fear or doubt or resistance in my body? So during the health anxiety workshop, I asked you a question. Could you be open to the possibility that your relationship with your body could be based in pleasure, or at least have room for pleasure alongside pain? Again, full circle moment. Focusing on pain, like dysregulation, triggers, repeated patterns, problems, is dysregulating to your nervous system. It will elevate cortisol because you're worrying about something internal, which leads to inflammation, immune system issues, sleep issues, hormone imbalances, weight gain. Pleasure, however, reduces cortisol. And when cortisol is reduced, the body can return to homeostasis. It's also important to remind yourself, I have been conditioned to focus on what's bad, what's wrong, and what needs to be fixed. Focus on that stuff will keep you distracted from pleasure and distracted from following your desire. It also keeps you from living authentically, because no one's authentic self is in fix-it mode as an inherent state. The highest, wisest, most loving, most trusting part of you is not interested in you as a fixer-upper, period. Repatterning happens when we change our personal relationship to pleasure. It also happens when we experience pleasure inside the container of safe reciprocal relationships. And you create safety and connection when you play and have fun with people and do life with people. So it's important to have those play experiences with yourself, but also with others, because again, you are a mammal, you are a pack animal, you are a herd animal, you are not meant to exist on an island. So here are some ways you can just do life together. This is what me and my people do. This is the only way that I know how to do community and co-regulating reciprocal relationships. We laugh together. We make happy memories together. We cook and eat together. We have two separate families that we cook a meal with and eat with every single week. We have dinner plans two nights a week, every single week with these people. We call it family dinner because these people are our chosen family. Helping one another. We help each other all the time. They come over and help me in my garden. I go over and help them with their chickens. I help them stack their firewood. They help me stack my firewood. I help them take care of their child. We're always helping each other. We do holidays together. I've had more holidays with my chosen family up here in the last 9 years than I've had with my own family or with David's family. It's amazing. We repair our ruptures together. And yes, I do have ruptures with I'm about to introduce you to my people, and I do have ruptures with them. We have all had to navigate ruptures and conflict and communication. This is just how you do life with people. You spend time in each other's homes. You don't worry if your home is perfect. You have regular meals together. You share food. You share tools. You share supplies. You hold space for one another. You help with childcare. You invest in each other's kids. You do chores together. You ride along when you have the time and your friend has an appointment or an errand. That's something that we do with our friends a lot. It's like if one of my friends is like, I have an appointment in the city, are you free? Can you ride with me? And we use the car ride to like connect and spend time together. We celebrate milestones together. Something that the females in our tribe clan do is that when our girls have their first period, we do a women's only red tent sauna and we sauna together and we talk all about the amazingness of being a woman and listening to your body and how your body changes throughout your cycle. And we explain the four phases of the menstrual cycle and how you feel in the beginning phase versus how you feel the third week and fourth week of your cycle. It's a beautiful, beautiful experience that we started with my daughter, and we are repeating with each girl who has her first cycle. So the whole tribe is part of that. It's not something that's hush hush. The dads know about it. We can talk about it openly, but that's one of the milestones that we celebrate together is when our girls start menstruating. We don't want them to have a first period that isn't celebrated. We want them to have like celebration about their cycle and not fear and feeling like it's a curse and like an inconvenience that they have to deal with for the rest of their lives. So in community like this, natural opportunities are going to arise to build safety and intimacy. Natural opportunities of conflict happen, disagreements happen, schedules don't always work, people get sick, they go on vacation, we have ebbs and flows of time together. And every time a rupture happens, no matter how big or small it is, we begin to learn that love stays. And ruptures don't feel so scary after you've navigated a few ruptures and you come out on the other side and you're like, wow, we love each other more. We feel safer with each other now. I can trust you more. That's what the rupture and repair process does. It builds intimacy in a relationship. This heals a fear of abandonment and allows hypervigilance, bonding behaviors, and sensitivity to go down naturally because you begin to have these disconfirming experiences in relationships. It's disconfirming all those experiences from childhood or from long-term marriage relationships where you may have developed complex PTSD and you have all these fears and these adaptations that shows up. When you begin to live in community like this, it disconfirms all that and it starts to repattern your body to go, oh, okay, this can be safe. I can belong here. Everything is okay. These people aren't leaving me. So here's my people. This is my platonic life partner, Honor. She looks like the princess in the Disney movie Brave. Her hair is like long and red, like this. It's like amazing. This is her daughter, Alma. We just celebrated her first period last month. So obviously she's a lot younger in this picture. There's David and Alma. Alma's like our child. She's like our child that we had later in life. So that's us. These are our friends, Mark and Ellen. This is Mark, the guy who says this is what's happening. That's this guy. That's his partner, Ellen. They're getting married at the end of this month. We do lots of things with them here. We had a slug picking party in my garden, and we just like went around the garden and picked slugs. And that's us taking a picture with our like cans full of slugs. Oops. This is Jeffrey. This is Honor's partner and Alma's dad. And he and I have a really special relationship. He was a tough nut for me to crack, but I did. So that feels really good. And then of course there's David, my person forever. We've been together since we were 18. This year we'll celebrate 22 years of marriage, and next week we'll be together for 23 years. So I also have Kat and Kirby, but I haven't put pictures of them in the slide yet. But those are also like they're part of my community as well. All right. So when the energy of fixing tries to come in, when the health and healing perfectionism tries to take over, when all the voices in your head are saying that you haven't made progress or you're not healing fast enough or whatever it is that they're saying, remind yourself from that quote from Pete Walker earlier that temporary regressions are normal. They're totally normal. You're still a human being with a brain and a nervous system that is prone to getting triggered sometimes. You're living in awareness. You're taking responsibility for yourself. You're doing the work. Pete says, those who stick with a long-term recovery process are often rewarded with emotional intelligence far beyond the norm. This is somewhat paradoxical, as survivors of childhood trauma are initially injured more grievously in their emotional natures than those in the general population. The silver lining in this, however, is that many of us were forced to consciously address our suffering because our wounding was so much more severe. Those who work in effective recovery program not only recover significantly from emotional damage, but also evolve out of the emotional impoverishment of general society. Perhaps the greatest reward of improved emotional intelligence is seen in a greater capacity for deeper intimacy. Intimacy is greatly enhanced when two people dialogue about all aspects of their experience. This is especially true when they transcend taboos against full emotional communication. Feelings of love, appreciation, and gratitude are naturally enhanced when we reciprocally show our full selves, confident or afraid, loving or alienated, proud or embarrassed. What an incredible achievement it is when any two of us create such an authentic and supportive relationship. Many of the most intimate relationships that I have seen are between people who have done a great deal of freeing themselves from the negative legacies of their upbringings. Embodying our authentic selves and connection with others' authentic selves is why we feel without fear. It's the entire point. That's what all of it's for. Period. That's it, you guys. That is the end.